This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It is Thursday, April 18th, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We are having a few showers during the day today. Temperatures are slowly falling right now. 52 degrees at O'Hare and along the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. The markets are mixed right now, and a new social media outlet has joined Wall Street, but don't call them a social media outlet. Let's get the latest now from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob and Chris. Pinterest is debuting on the New York Stock Exchange and doing quite a nice job of it. Shares are higher by more than 27%. Rob's talking about the fact the company doesn't want to be viewed as just any other social media site, but instead a place where people shape their buying plans. And so that might be a way for the company to monetize the customers that are the users, I should say, that are already on the site. Pinterest not interested in adding more people necessarily so much as it is monetizing the users it's got. The Dow is up 100 points or a third of a percent. NASDAQ slightly lower, off 6. S&P up 3. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index gaining a tenth of a percent. Retail sales rebounded in March, up 1.6%, the most since 2017. And investors got upbeat news from the labor market again, another week with historically low jobless claims. The total number is holding below 200,000. Travelers posted results from what turned out to be a quiet quarter. The results beat expectations for a third quarter in a row. The beginning of last year brought lots of heavy weather and catastrophe, so by comparison here, 2019 has been quite strong for the insurer. Finally, stock in drug makers and healthcare providers, as you know, has been under pressure this week. Today, the three worst performers on the blue chips among them are Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and Merck. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Lisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to be talking about progress in the weed business. And we're going to also talk about what Lisa just alluded to, the healthcare stocks are sliding today. Why?
It's Technology Thursday. Did you know a video game could be essential in rebuilding Notre Dame after this week's fire? And then we'll talk about artificial intelligence and shoplifters, some of the legal and ethical issues as stores use AI to get shoplifters out of their store.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The explosion in the cannabis the industry continues. We're going to cover that in our next segment. But right now, a very busy day of data, including the latest report on retail sales. We're joined by Bob Breska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Welcome back to the program, Bob. What are some of the markers that you're watching right now?
It's interesting that we've had a number of very weak reports. Particularly February, most of the categories showed declines in February. And in March, we're seeing very strong bounce backs. This kind of strength wasn't expected. I was looking for, 1.1% gain in the report, and we actually logged a 1.6% gain. We knew auto sales were going to be strong, but what's interesting is the strength really up and down the rest of the report. However, when you look at it, when you take it apart and you look at the sectors, what you see is that, there is a pop in the three-month growth rates, but for a lot of them, the year-over-year growth rates are almost unaffected, and the six-month growth rates are rarely affected. So this looks more to me like makeup for a very weak February, maybe because of the delayed tax receipts, maybe because of the government shutdown, all of these things and bad weather that kind of combine to give us a very weak set of numbers earlier in the year, and now we're kind of getting back on track, but maybe not quite the strength that it appears to be. But, back to the sort of trend that we had, and some of those trends are still decaying.
What's going on in the healthcare industry right now?
Healthcare right now is, you're seeing in this report, anyhow, weaker spending. Although spending over 3 months in this report is still pretty solid on healthcare, pretty strong actually. But in the markets and in terms of in the stock market, you're having an awful lot of churning and concern about, you know, what the Democrats are going to do. You go to Medicare, and then you combine that with these threats to use America's market power to drive prices down to drug companies, something that I think is really long overdue. And this is what the healthcare industry is suffering under. And, you know, we simply let drug companies sell the same drugs to Canada and to Europeans at much lower rates than they sell it to the United States for our government programs. And how is that fair? That's not fair. The drug companies are getting a sense that, you know, they're running toward the end of this gravy train, no matter who gets elected.
There's been a long discussion over the last year or so about this retail apocalypse, that online shopping is really pulling the rug out from under brick-and-mortar stores. But if you look at strong retail sales, at least for the month of March of 2019, is that retail apocalypse, that's still happening on schedule, or has that been delayed by a couple of years?
Oh, well, this report doesn't make me think anything has been delayed for a couple of years. I'll tell you, Rob, this is there's a lot of weakness in the retail sector, and a lot of malls are really in trouble. And it's really true that a lot of spending has been shifted to the online environment, and it's just not coming back. You know, we've been hearing, you know, over the last decade, there's been talk about how we've seen the last mall built in America, and, you know, some of them now are shuttered or, you know, like gap tooth smiles, have lots of missing entities in them. I think there's no doubt that that's true and that that trend is going to continue. There's some things you can get online that are cheaper. And I'll give you an example. I live in New York City, okay? A lot of stores in New York City, right? I had I'd redone my apartment. I had a refrigerator to buy. I couldn't see one in New York. I had to go all the way out to the end of the subway line out in Brooklyn to find one store that still had a showroom where I could physically see the refrigerator I wanted to buy. You know, people aren't stocking these things, you know, so it's affecting inventory. It's affecting the way the industry works. Everything is being affected by it. I mean, this is a total change in the way of shopping. So I think it's real. I really do, Rob.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Bob Bruska, chief economist with Fact of an Opinion Economics, based in New York. Coming up, a Canadian marijuana grower strikes a deal in the U.S. contingent on the drug's legalization by the federal government.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Canadian marijuana producer Canopy Growth has agreed to buy New York-based Acreage Holdings in a $3.4 billion deal, but there is one key condition. We're joined by Christine Oram, reporter for Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Christine, welcome to the program. What is that key condition? What's holding up this $3.4 billion deal?
Thanks for having me. That key condition is federal legalization of marijuana, which is a big if. We don't know if and when that's going to happen. So essentially, Canopy is making a $3.4 billion bet that it will sometime in the next 7.5 years. That's how long the deal has until it expires. For now, Canopy's paying $300 million to Acreage shareholders up front, with the remainder of that $3.4 billion coming if and when the U.S. legalizes. And you can tell by the market reaction today that investors are a little uncertain how to take this. That at the open of trading, Acreage shares were up more than 20%, but now they're actually trading lower. So investors are clearly trying to sort out exactly what this means for them.
What does Canopy Growth hope to get, assuming this $3.4 billion deal is consummated and marijuana is either at least legalized or decriminalized in the U.S.?
Well, what they really want is a foothold in the U.S. market. Now, Canopy is currently the biggest cannabis company in the world by market value, but it doesn't really have much of a presence in the United States because of that federal illegality issue. It has a small hemp business, but that's about it. And so it's looking for a toehold in that market, but it can't go directly in yet. And that's why we have this complex deal structure today. The reason for that is because it's listed on the New York Stock Exchange, and the NYSE prevents companies that are listed on it from violating federal law. And technically, if Canopy had any U.S. marijuana operations, it would be breaking the law. And so this is sort of an indirect way to have that foothold the second that legalization happens without breaking any laws in the meantime.
I mentioned decriminalization. This is hinging strictly on legalization, or can this go forward just if it's decriminalized?
The press release today does use the word legalization, but one analyst I spoke to earlier said that the States Act, which essentially proposes that the federal government would take a hands-off approach and let states decide whether or not they wanted to legalize marijuana, would be enough to allow Canopy to go into the U.S. market. So that's a bill that's currently working its way through the House. It's been co-sponsored by both parties. And so if that gets approved, and again, that's a pretty big if, that could be enough for Canopy to close this deal.
Are we going to look back on this in 15, 20 years and saying, remember all the hoo-ha about getting this approved?
Probably you're right about that, I suspect, and I suspect we're going to see a lot more deals like this. This is very unique today. We haven't seen this kind of structure before, and for the most part, the big Canadian cannabis companies have largely stayed out of the U.S. for those legal reasons, but I suspect, in a few months, we'll see more deals like this, and suddenly this won't look so unusual.
Now, was this deal was consummated in a boardroom? They didn't go into the apartment of the Canopy Growth CEO and talk for a couple of hours and then reach this agreement?
What are you saying there?
I'm not sure about that, but apparently it did. The talks went into the wee hours of the morning. They were meeting late last night to conclude this deal, and we were sort of waiting all morning for it to be finalized. And so clearly this is super complicated. The lawyers who worked on this said this is probably the most complex transaction they've ever worked on. And it's very unusual to have this kind of deal that's contingent on a change in federal law. I can't think of any other industry where we would have seen a similar deal like that in the past.
Well, thank you very much. Kristen Oram, reporter with Bloomberg based in San Francisco. Up next in Technology Thursday, how a video game could have a role in the restoration of the Notre Dame Cathedral in France.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. This portion of the news is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. And here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, we are divided. The Dow is up 117 points, or almost 0.5%. NASDAQ down 0.1%, or 7 points, and the S&P adding 4. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg up more than 0.1%. It is a solid start for stock in Pinterest. Shares are rising about 27% after the company raised $1.4 billion. It was the second biggest IPO in the U.S. this year. The digital scrapbooking company now has a market value of about $13 billion. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We've had a mixed day here today, and it's the last day of trade for the week. We're closed tomorrow, but corn right now, December unchanged at 386 3/4. July up a half at 367 1/2. We've been up 1 1/2, down 1 1/2 to up 1. Beans have been up 2 to down 1/2 at the moment. We have November beans at 914 3/4, up 2 1/2 near their high. The wheat for July down 3 at 447. Mixed prices here at the Board of Trade. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got temperatures in the 40s and 50s and some rain today. The five-day forecast coming up.
Stocks are mixed today. That's one of our top stories on WBBM. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Technology Thursday, how video game modeling and 3D digital scans could help in the restoration of the Notre Dame Cathedral.
On the tech front, a controversial application of artificial intelligence could help catch shoplifters.
Chicago sportscaster Jeff Coppock has died from injuries suffered in a car crash last week.
President Trump says the Mueller report proves there was no collusion between his campaign and Russia. The details from CBS News coming up in a matter of seconds. The Dow was up 119 points. It's 12:31.
CBS News special report. The redacted Mueller report is out. And what about collusion?
There never was, by the way, and there never will be.
The report by no means an exoneration of the administration. Constitutional law expert Jonathan Turley.
We are getting for the first time the president's reaction to being informed by his former attorney general, Jeff Sessions, that special counsel Robert Mueller had been appointed. Quote, President Trump said, "Oh my God, this is terrible. This is the end of my presidency. I'm, quote, effed."
Now we hear from constitutional law expert Jonathan Turley.
Mueller did not feel restrained by DOJ policies in deciding not to say that this was obstruction. But he also did indicate some of those prosecutors believed an obstruction case could be made.
Democrats are asking for Mueller to testify before Congress. House Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler requesting that testimony by May 23rd. CBS News Special Report, I'm Jim Chenevier.
WBBM News Time, 12:32. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
It has been a mixed day on Wall Street so far. We're joined by Tim Grisky, Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council in New York. Welcome back to the noon business hour, Tim. What are you seeing today?
Hi, Chris. The market, stock market is up a little bit today. We're in the heat of earnings season here, so a bit fast and furious with information coming out of companies. It's been a mixed season so far. Analysts are forecasting for lower earnings year over year for this quarter, although revenues are expected to be up significantly. And we're pretty much seeing that play out so far. But it's, of course, early in the earnings season to come to any conclusion.
Politics getting involved in this at all?
You know, I really don't think politics have a lot to do with the stock market, at least in terms of all of this noise. Certainly, if we were talking about something that was really impeachable here, if we were going to see a major change in leadership in Washington, that would be another story. I think there is some looking out to the next presidential election in 2020, especially with the healthcare sector, which has been battered, by the prospect of single-payer plans, which some of the Democratic candidates are putting forward here. So a lot of the health insurance companies and the hospitals have taken it on the chin. But other than that, it's I think focus on earnings is what it's all about.
Now, speaking of earnings, one of the economic indicators, especially in this era of uncertainty involving free trade, not only with China, but also with the Canada and Mexico, is the health of the railroads. And three railroads are out with their earnings estimates. And what can they tell us about the state of the economy?
Well, Rob, I think it's, Union Pacific came out. They beat on earnings, but they missed on revenues. And I think that's going to be a theme for a number of the not only railroads, but other industrial type companies for this quarter. And a lot of that has to do with trade and the prospect of trade and a trade agreement coming out at some point in the future. So it wasn't a really strong quarter for Union Pacific, and yet the stock is up almost 5% here. It will likely benefit from increased agricultural trade with China. That's going to be probably a big part of this trade agreement, so there's anticipation of that. Although I think the railroads aren't telling us a lot in this quarter, other than there was some bad weather, the prospect for them is favorable going forward.
And then Union Pacific, if you want to talk about the supply chain from China, they serve all the ports in California. They take the goods to the Midwest, and then CSX takes you from Chicago to the East Coast. And then the Kansas City Southern is interesting because that was known as the NAFTA Railroad, connecting Canada and Mexico through the nation's midsection. And that would be an entity affected by the NAFTA negotiations.
Absolutely. I think the big beneficiary here of the eventual trade agreement is Union Pacific. As you said, they are the Western Railroad. They serve all those Western ports. They're really the both the export and import point to China from the U.S. They're going to be a big beneficiary here of whatever the trade agreement is. But the whole group really here is, we think, going to benefit as our economy continues to pick up in terms of growth. We're having a little bit of a slow point this quarter, But there are a lot of reasons for that. I think looking forward here, we're seeing better economies ahead, and that's going to help all the industrials and the railroads.
What about American Express and its earnings that it brought out today?
Yeah, American Express had good earnings. They beat expectations. Revenues were in line. A solid performance here by the company. Very different story here than the MasterCard and Visa names. American Express is much more corporate, of course, and they're not they don't have their hand in as many different spots as as MasterCard and Visa, but very good earnings coming out of that name, and of course the stock is reacting positively as well.
Thanks for joining us today. Tim Grisky is Chief Investment Strategist at Inverness Council in New York. Up next, Technology Thursday, how the science of video gaming could be applied to the restoration of the historic Notre Dame Cathedral.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and this afternoon we're looking at ways that tech, including video game design, could help in the restoration of the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. And we're joined by Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, welcome back to the program, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a more 2019 headline than the video game Assassin's Creed possibly being essential in the rebuilding of Notre Dame after the fire on Monday.
Yes, I think anybody who watches video games understands that it's rare that it's essential for anything other than the video game. But in this case, it's a huge exception. The folks at Assassin's Creed, which includes lots of action during the French Revolution, includes very, very detailed drawings of Notre Dame. And in fact, artists and historians who were working on creating that game about 5 years ago spent over a year looking at photos, videos, architectural plans, basically a digital model that's incredibly realistic. And they have offered that model, as well as, believe it or not, 500,000 euros to the restoration effort.
This is a trend in gaming. There's also a video game in development that takes place on the Titanic that has a restoration of the ship that would make James Cameron jealous. I mean, it's that detailed. And as this technology moves forward, this world of VR, virtual reality moves forward outside of video games, could this be used by universities and other institutions to protect our cultural and architectural heritage on a level never thought possible?
Well, you know what's happening? First of all, the short answer is yes, it's already happening. In a lot of cases, art history classes in a number of schools, including Dartmouth, where I went, actually use virtual reality to walk people through structures that no longer exist, exactly as you described it, based on drawings, architectural and otherwise, and paintings and art interpretations and so forth, to give those students and a feeling for what it was like in these buildings. Again, that in some cases, buildings that no longer exist. In the case of Assassin's Creed, what's exciting is that parts of this building were destroyed, obviously, by the fire. Assassin's Creed, as well as other historians who've done laser examinations of the inside of Notre Dame, all these will add up to a restoration of an experience that would have been, even 20, 30 years ago, would have been lost. So it's actually great news.
Let's hear some other examples. This is really interesting, crowding around and helping to put something back together.
Sure. In fact, the really sad experience over in Syria when ISIS toppled a number of ancient structures, Roman structures in many cases, in anticipation of this happening, a number of historians dashed to get pictures taken from all angles of these structures before ISIS arrived and indeed destroyed a number of the structures that were priceless. They could not obviously be reconstructed. And now you could go online and see, because of those historians taking images, digital recreations and in some cases photographic recreations from all angles of these ancient Roman structures. So it's happening in a lot of places. It is great news in the face of tragedy.
If people get lost in old YouTube videos of maybe colorized videos of Chicago from the 1940s, could we reach a time 30 years from now where just some people just get lost in this VR world of history, and they could literally never live a day of their life in the present year?
Well, I there are some days when I feel like doing that.
Don't we all?
But I will say, you know, there's even a film version. Jackson, the director of the Lord of the Rings and the other films, also did something sort of similar in film version. He captured a whole bunch of World War One footage, got actors to actually speak the lip-reading lines they detected from the soldiers, who obviously were speaking in front of film cameras with no sound, and added color and sound and everything else. So to do exactly what you described, give people an experience they couldn't have without going back. And I think it's truly immersive. And as you said, it's enthralling. You could get lost in it.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show, joins this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come on this Technology Thursday, preventing shoplifting using artificial intelligence.
The noon business hour continues.
Well, it's time for part two of Technology Thursday. New artificial intelligence software being used in Japan is designed to identify potential shoplifters. Let's talk about the effectiveness and the ethics with Shelley Palmer, CEO of Palmer Group in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Shelley. Let's talk about this.
Well, you know, there are two parts of this. The face recognition is getting really good. And there are certain organizations like Facebook where you are tagging yourself every time you want someone to know it's you, and in a lot of different situations. So Facebook's face recognition is amazing. The U.S. Passport Office's face recognition is pretty good. The FBI and the NSA's face recognition is pretty good. So the technology's been there and is there. So now you have an ethical question, which is, if you've got a security camera in your place of business, and like a casino would have an entire detail of very highly trained people watching every transaction for fraud and trying to keep their eye on the cash, if you added face recognition to that, which would give you, let's call it, I'm 93% sure that I'm 58% certain that this 93% chance that this is Shelley Palmer that's sitting at the table, you're going to identify that person anyway by human means. So identifying it by computer just seems to cut costs and improve accuracy. So if you don't have a problem having a person sitting there watching you transact, I don't know why you'd have a problem with a computer watching you sitting there and transact.
Has there been a move on in this part of the artificial intelligence? Manufacturers want to do it?
So I'll tell you where people want it the most. People want it in retail stores for two reasons. One, for security, but two, for attribution. So let's pretend you're on Facebook and you see an ad, or you're on Google and Google has an ID and knows it's you looking for something specifically, searching for shoes. Then you walk into the store and buy those shoes. This would be invaluable to the advertiser and to the seller of the advertising, because it would make those advertising dollars have a demonstrable return on investment. That kind of use is really questionable ethically. It's questionable, but technologically, it's incredibly possible. The use of it for security, the use of it to reduce shoplifting, you're allowed to be vigilant in your place of business, and you are. People have armed security guards all over the place. So, and what are they doing? They're looking for suspicious characters. So anything that enhances that, I don't think it's an ethical problem. But here was the ethical problem I was going to bring up to you guys. Who owns that data, and what do you do with it? Does it go into a database? Like, now are you blacklisted the way the credit card companies blacklist you if you take advantage of too many offers? People may not know this, but if you abuse your credit card offers or you transfer your balance too often, there's a blacklist of people who take promotions, and they won't just offer you promotions anymore. That's been around for about 25 years. Would that be weird with face recognition? When you walk in a store and someone politely walks up and says, sorry, you're not welcome to shop here? That's crazy. I don't know where that goes. But that's the problem. Like, once you start this snowball down the hill, I don't know where the snowball ends.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, based in New York. Follow him on Twitter at Shelley Palmer and at ShelleyPalmer.com. If you miss any part of the Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Business news sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, the Dow is up 134 points, or 0.5%. NASDAQ lower by 1. S&P adding 6. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg up almost 0.2%. All eyes are on Pinterest and Zoom, both companies making their Wall Street debut today. Pinterest price shares at $19 in its IPO. That stock surging 27%. Video conferencing company Zoom is living up to its name. That stock jumping 80% from its IPO price of $36, soaring all the way up to $64 a share. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.